From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made every Thanksgiving, when a local radio host and a musician searches for something he could never seem to find. It's a recipe for pumpkin bread, and it's written down in a sketchbook from the 1970s. The problem is there are dozens of sketchbooks in the house, and Scott Regan can't recall which one has the damn recipe. You know Scott Regan as the host of Open Tunings and a legendary voice in our community. You might not know he is an artist, whether he's willing to accept the title or not. Scott's sketchbooks come in all shapes and sizes. They include drawings, hundreds, probably thousands, and they also include song lyrics, notes about past soccer or hockey games, and yes, some recipes. For a while, Scott was doing sketches in a blue ballpoint pen, and if I can say so, he has a beautiful ability to draw people, drawing people almost exclusively. Scott's family says he's been in the planning stages for a painting studio for just about ever, even though he hasn't completed a painting in 40 years. It turns out that while a studio seems like a good idea, Scott Regan is most inspired when he's sitting with his materials in the vicinity of his subject. And you take the Rochester Jazz Festival, for example. Local music writer Jeff Spivak wrote haikus, and Scott created sketches when they were in the same Jazz Fest venue, soaking in the scenes. Some of it's breezy, whimsical, but a lot of it is beautiful and haunting. The work is compiled in a book called Jazz Lines. Did you even know this about Scott Regan? Is this such great stuff here? Well, today we finally welcome our friend and colleague Scott Regan to this studio. Yay. I don't know if he's ever been in this here, so it's great to see him here. This month, the gallery at the Little Cafe is featuring Sights and Sounds 3, Art by Musicians, Music by Artists. And Scott's work will be displayed. He's brought some of his friends as well. So let me introduce them. Did you know that I knew about the recipe, Scott Regan?
I had no idea.
I like to surprise my guests. Where is it, by the way? Did you find it this Thanksgiving?
I do know exactly
okay,
where it is.
Okay, all right.
It's in a sketchbook I had from 1976 in Saratoga. I was living with Colorblind James back then, and I can still picture the sketch across from all the recipes. So,
how many sketchbooks do you think you have?
I don't know.
Can't too much to count, huh?
Yeah. 15, 20, something
yeah.
like that.
Well, we're going to be talking about his work and the folks who are with him, because Scott's the host of Open Tunings, a musician as well, though, yes?
Yeah, we can the, say the same way I'm an artist without a painting studio.
So Scott is here. His work's displayed at the Little Theater. Paul Dodd is here. Paul currently plays drums with Margaret Explosion. It's improvised jazz instrumental sounds. And I was telling Paul before the hour began, my friend Gary told me recently when he sees them at the Little Theater on Wednesday, or the Little Cafe on Wednesdays, it's like going to church with the Margaret Explosion. But I recently enjoyed checking out Paul Dodd's work and some of his work online at his website, and we're going to be talking to him. So, Paul, welcome. Nice to have you as well.
Thank you.
Charles Jaffe's here. He works in marquetry, creates images with wood inlay on panels. Can't wait to talk about that. Welcome. Nice to have you here, sir.
Thank you.
Also here is Peter Monticelli. He teaches fine art at MCC. He's had a number of exhibits of his paintings, did the construction work that created the Little Theater Cafe and some of the theaters. And Peter, nice to have you here as well.
Thank you.
And Steve Piper's here, plays in Watkins and the Rapiers, and he's with Scott Regan, I should say. He's a professional photographer, recently started drawing, and in the past he's shown his photographs. It's the first time for your drawings, is that right?
Actually, I second or third time.
Okay,
I had a show of drawings there by myself a couple of years ago, but I forgot about it.
So did Scott Regan, but that's okay. He also brought his guitar, so a little later this hour.
He brought a guitar if anybody needs it, right?
Well, I certainly you wouldn't want to try to touch that thing. I don't have the calluses to play these days, but you guys do, so maybe later this hour we'll hear some of it. So nice to have you, Pipe. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Scott Regan, I want to start with you because it is great to see you in the studio up here. I pass you every time I go out to grab a cup of soup, I'm passing Scott's studio. And so many fans of Open Tunings may not know that you have these skills. But how did this whole Sights and Sounds, what's the origin here? How did this come together?
Well, I think Zan Brunner, somehow she came up with the idea a couple of years ago, and she approached us, and somehow I got asked. I don't even know how anybody knew about myself.
How do they know? How do they know about your artistic ability?
I have no idea. But I was really honored to be included, and so we put it together. There's five or six of us back then, and this is our third time doing it. Every time it's a real treat. It's great to see everyone's work up and check out what's going on.
Why did you decide to start drawing? Or a better question is, did you decide to start drawing? Is art something that you think is a sort of inside people that needs to find an outlet to come out in some way?
Yeah, I think that's kind of true. I was a pretty straight math and science student and went through high school without taking any art. And I was always interested in it. I was sort of doodled here and there. And I went to engineering school at RPI and thought, you know, if I do this and get a degree, I'll be doing this for the rest of my life. And I thought, I don't know. I'm going to try something else for a while. And I just changed majors to art and decided to give it a shot and just fell in love with it. You know, drawing, drawing is such a tactile thing. It just gets you in touch with what's happening at the moment in a way that practically nothing else does. I love drawing.
So you mostly draw people, yes?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, activities, you know, people out doing something. A lot of musicians, people sitting on buses. You know, basically I just love the human face.
Are you looking for a chance to draw someone in more of a natural setting as opposed to someone posing for you? I mean, most of what I'm seeing in jazz and other settings, they're doing what they do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of pressure doing it when they're posing for you because you have no excuse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that doesn't look like me, you know. But it's a challenge to draw someone when they're sort of moving constantly, as most musicians do. But at the same time, you know, they make good subjects because they're stuck there and they're not conscious of you because they're conscious of what they're doing. So it's easy to sort of drop in on their world, as opposed to having that self-conscious model artist relationship.
Tell me a little bit about the medium blue ballpoint pen for a while. Is that right?
Yeah, the big pen school of art. That was that lasted about a year and a half or so. And I discovered that it really isn't that much more expensive. We didn't have much money back then to get a real pen and draw with real pen and ink. And actually, the ink lasts longer that way too.
Okay, so now you're going to go home and draw tonight. What are you drawing with?
Oh, I've got a number of those. I can't remember what type they are because I just go and try them all out. You know, the Rochester Art Supply is such a wonderful place to go. They've got supplies that you dream of, you know. So I just pretty much go in there and check out what they've got and pick up a variety of pens. I've got probably 10 or 12 of them.
Is the world allowed to know that Jazz Lines exist? I mean, this is a beautiful book here. I didn't know it existed until it got dropped off at my desk here. When did you and Spivak make this?
I think it was about 2 years ago.
It's new.
Yeah.
And so the concept is, well, I'll let you explain here. I mean, it's Jeff's haikus and your drawings.
You know, Jeff does the haikus every...
Is that right?
He publishes whenever... when he does his reviews of any of the shows at the Jazz Fest, he includes a haiku with it. So there's a haiku every day during the Jazz Fest, and he generally just sort of picks... I don't know. I can't speak for him, but Jeff, are you out there? he generally will just sort of randomly pick a performance and write a haiku about it. And I noticed after a while, you know, we've got a lot of the same performers. So basically, the haikus pretty much all match up with the performer he was writing about. And I thought, you know, hey, we should put this all together. And you can do it pretty easy online with book publishing services. So we just did that just for kicks, you know.
Just for kicks, and I love it. Can I read a few of his haikus?
Oh yeah,
I wish I could translate your sketches to the audience, but you know, here's one that. What a great use of language here. Here's the haiku Jeff wrote. Hobbit of guitar has the liquid touch of rain hitting the leaves. The liquid touch of rain hitting the leaves. And, you know, your drawing is, I mean, if you want to tell me just a little bit what you decided to draw with that there.
Yeah, yeah. What's
Well, tell me about how you decided to match. I love the liquid touch of rain hitting the leaves. That's a great use of language.
I'm not sure if that's who I think it is, but basically we matched it because that was the performer from the haiku. So
just a man holding his guitar, Looks like a little hat on his head and just beautiful little shot. Now there's someone on the piano in the next shot here. New and old collide. Notes seemingly drift from smoky neon rooms.
He's a wonderful writer.
I
read all of his reviews and all of his little articles in the paper, and they never cease to surprise me in some way. The language, you're talking about the language, and his use of language is unlike a lot of people in this who write, especially newspaper writers. He's just really an inventive and delightfully creative writer.
Yeah, he is. And I don't remember if it was, he reviewed, I was VJ Iyer or somebody at a recent jazz fest. And I remember just thinking the prose alone in this is art. But let me read another of his haikus, Spivak's haikus, because this is a guy who's clearly choosing not to use cliches, but he's still putting interesting turns of language. Old man remembers words still ringing true today, like birds and bare trees. What an awesome image. And what did you draw there to go with it, Scott?
Who was that? It's been so long since I've seen it, but this, the old guy sitting on one of the old musicians who John Nugent pulls in so well. I can't remember who it was, though.
And what are you trying to do when you capture a scene like this, just sketching this? Just trying to represent what you're seeing?
You get in the moment and you don't really think about it. I'm not really trying to do anything. I'm trying to find, trying to let the drawing take over for itself, and then you just sort of follow it, you know. You just let the drawing sort of begins to live, and you just have to keep pushing the darkness and pushing the light, you know.
And so how many of your drawings are going to be on display at the Little this month?
11.
11 of yours?
Yeah.
Okay, because...
If they let me have that much space.
You guys are hanging it today? Is that right? You finished here?
Tomorrow.
Okay, yeah, so you're hanging tomorrow morning. And then there is a Sunday reception, by the way. This Sunday, 1:30 to 4:30 at the Little Cafe's Art Gallery. And a nice chance to go down and meet these great artists. Scott just keeps smiling when you get called an artist. But maybe 11 of your works. How many guys around the table? I mean, Paul, how many of yours?
I put 10 things together as one. And I have a couple other.
Okay. Pipe, how many?
Yeah. So I'm going to bring 13 of different sizes, and remains to be seen how many will go up.
Okay.
As many as I can squeeze in.
All right.
I have seven. I have seven pieces based on a song.
Oh, I see. We'll talk about that in a second there. And
see,
Jeff?
I just got a whole house.
I just have 10. I'm bringing 10.
All right. So about four dozen, it sounds like, spread out among them for art by musicians and music by artists at the Little Cafe Gallery all the month of April, starting tomorrow, hanging it tomorrow. And so, Scott, how did you choose which 11 you wanted to do? Do you have a theme? Any theme? You throw some darts?
How did I choose? Yeah, I just sort of go through and see what strikes me. You know, I try to choose the most recent ones. Mm-hmm. So they've all come from, a lot of them are from last year's Jazz Fest and other performances through the past few months. So basically it's just ones that I like from recent performances.
And when you're drawing, sort of in a cathartic way for yourself, do you share it with the subjects with any regularity?
You know, I like to get the subject to sign them. So I have a lot of signatures on them. It's easy. I go to a lot of house concerts, and at a house concert, you usually have a really good drawing perspective.
Oh, yeah.
And you get to speak with the people who are performing. So, you just sort of chat with them for a while and say, hey, would you sign the sketch? And sometimes they like them, and sometimes they don't. You know,
they don't tell you they don't, do they?
No, but you can tell. You can tell by the way they sort of
sign somebody else's name.
Yeah, yeah, they go, thanks a lot for this.
Yeah, it can tell when you do, and they can tell. You can tell when they don't.
I've been to a house concert with Bat McGrath.
Mm-hmm.
Just a beautiful little setting, a couple dozen people, and we need more of that. I think. Don't you think?
They're out there. They're out there. I'll get you in touch with them.
If anybody knows where they are, you would know where they are. there is something about live music performance and an audience that is sort of locked into it not distracted by modern technology. Let me check Twitter while we do that. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, so I do find that almost a spiritual experience, you know, seeing Bat in that kind of a setting. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to see what you would draw in that kind of a setting. So when you go to this house concert,
I've got two or three drawings of Bat.
Of Bat?
Yeah, it's funny.
And do you find a little space for yourself? If you're at a house concert, do you find a little extra space for yourself to kind of set up and draw?
I mean, No. I mean, house concerts are tight, you know.
I know.
You just have to find the right seat where you got the angle you want. And then you look over someone's shoulder.
Host of Open Tunings, did you even know what Scott was capable of? His work there, he's getting tired of talking about himself, so we'll talk to some of the other guys in the group here. Let me go around the table, and Paul Dodd is here. I was checking out Paul's blog, Online Work. Well, that's all right. We'll get to Pipe there. Yeah. He didn't have the microphone in front of you. So, Paul... Paul, you're online where, by the way? When I talk about your blog and your work online, what's your website?
I grabbed the domain name popwars.com.
Pop Wars.
Yes, Pop Wars.
And
I don't know why. I don't even know what it means, but I like it.
You're a painter, musician, and photographer.
Yep.
And a walk taker and sort of a, to my mind, almost a philosophizer when I read some of your stuff there.
Deep thoughts. But
how often are you creating? Because I was reading, let's see here, you mentioned recently that you filled all the space of your spare time with painting. And you wrote that that's, quote, an activity that respects no time frame. You dive in and don't stop until it is right. And even when it is only right for then, the best you can do for now. And right. You wrote that you finally finished a batch of paintings, 12 or so, a series that was started last year. Mm-hmm. So some people will work on one piece until it's done. They'll try to do it in a day. Some people will do it in a week or a month. It sounds like you've got a lot of things working at different times.
Yeah, I like to work on a few things at once. And if I lose momentum with something, I just walk away from it and I come back fresh, you know, maybe first thing in the morning or something. And it looks all different. And you know, you bear down on something you're working on and you lose sight of, you know, the forest for the trees kind of thing. And, you know, it becomes clear when you approach it fresh and just try to trust your eyes, you know, what they see right away, what they're drawn to. And like I say, it's very easy to lose sight of that when you're working on a piece. So I just walk away from them and then, you know, sometimes chuck them or finish them.
Are there days where you've got nothing in you, that you, no desire or no sort of spark to create?
Yeah, of course. But those days, you know, there's always something to work on. Something, you know, that's sitting there that you know you could do this and you just do that and it leads to something else. That never fails. You just start doing something and it opens up other doors. So I think it's some sort of lesson in there. Just start doing it.
Well, we've talked to your comments about painting and creating remind me of some of our conversations with authors who will write 2,500 words in 2 hours and then the next day wake up and have nothing in them and have to kind of walk away from a project for a while, mm-hmm. Or even walk away for a week or a month before they get back to working on a book. And, you know, I'm curious to know, what is it about it that can bring you back to? Because a lot of people will walk away and stay away. I mean, are there paintings that you don't go back to, that you kind of create and process and don't go back to?
Yeah, put them out in the garage and eventually cut them up with my table saw.
They cannot be rehabilitated.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they just, you know. Yes, of course. I think it's the same with any art, you know, any art endeavor, writing or music or visual art. I mean, they're all the same principles involved. You're trying to communicate something, whether it, even sometimes it's just for yourself. I mean, some people do things that they're desperate to communicate to other people, and, you know, they got price tags on it, and they're done to sell or something. I mean, it's totally valid. It's just there's many reasons, I think, to do any of those art forms, and
Can you tell me about Models from Crime?
Well, that's something I kind of got stuck on a long time ago. I did have a job working for the Rochester Police Department maybe a long time ago, somewhere in the 70s. And it was a one-year job, and I, before computers, and it was an attempt. It was called the Crime Analysis Unit. It was a graphic artist position. And I worked with, I pulled mugshots all day and I made flyers. And it was an attempt to connect people who were committing crimes in the city of Rochester to, well, the people where they lived to where the crimes were taking place. They were just trying to match up, hey, this kind of crime happened here, this person lives here. And but it was all done with paperwork and mugshots. I did do, you know, drawings, and I got fascinated with mugshots, and I don't really care what somebody did. I like the photo. So I've been painting and drawing mugshots for quite a while now.
And there's such a wide range in how people take their mugshots. It's very, very interesting.
Yeah.
But are you trying to say anything in that kind of a series? Is there an overall theme?
Probably not. Yeah.
Just fascinated by...
I mean, maybe just... Well, visually, I'm trying to say something, but something that I can express in words, probably not.
And then you also have a series, Homeless Teenagers.
Well, yeah, I did. Some people, local kids from a shelter here, I was able to meet and have pizza with them and take some photos, and then I did some drawings and paintings of them.
What drew you to do that?
I find them fascinating for some reason, and there's a lot of color in their faces. So that's usually what I do is just try to capture an expression somehow. So I don't care that much whether it really looks like the person, but I start not really looking at the source after a bit. I'm just trying to develop the person that I'm painting.
And what did you choose to display at the Little this month?
These are more, basically mugshots, but I call them models from Crime Page.
Mm-hmm. So that's what we'll see. We'll see how many for you?
Like somebody was saying, how many we can get up.
I guess you'll find out maybe, tomorrow, right?
Yeah, 10 or 11 or something like that. Yeah.
10 or 11. And you are a walker in the woods.
I am, yes. Every day I try to get out
reading there. Your blog, I think that's great. You know, I was telling a story recently. One of my favorite walk in the woods stories was two gentlemen in 1913 walking in Gloucestershire, England, and they get to a fork in the road, and one of them's like, I don't know which way, we can go this way or that way. And the other one says, well, you make a choice. It doesn't matter. They choose, and they go. The one was British, one was American. The American goes home, and he wrote a poem about it and sent an advance copy to his friend in England.
Yeah.
And the poem, two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both.
Of course, yeah.
It was Robert Frost, right? But we all knew the poem growing up as this rugged individualism. I took the road less traveled by, yes.
Mm-hmm.
When he's actually saying, he's making fun of his friend Edward Thomas, that it actually doesn't matter which way you go. You go back to the text of the poem, two roads that morning equally lay and leaves no step of tread. And he's making fun of how later in life we look back and say, well, congratulations to myself. I made the hard choice.
Yeah.
And if for some reason, your blog reminded me of that because you're the people who are still out there in a world of selfies and addiction to social media. You're out in nature still, and at least enjoying that.
There's very few people out there anymore. When I was a kid, I mean, we just ran wild in the woods, and I never run into any kids in the woods anymore.
Isn't that amazing?
That blows me away. I don't know why that is.
Kids should be in the woods,
tearing it up or, building forts and all that stuff.
What's the blog again? The name of the blog site?
The site is popwars.com, and I got, all kinds of junk up there. So
it's very tranquil, though. I really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you.
Popwars.com, so you can check out Paul's stuff. All right, Pipe. Steve Piper plays in Watkins and the Rapiers. With Scott, what is Watkins and the Rapiers anyway?
Oh, no. Don't ask me that question. We get asked that all the time, and we have yet to come up with a convincing answer. The short answer, what is Watkins?
Yeah,
I like that better than who is. Well, the short answer, which confounds everybody, is that back in the 50s and 60s in England, there was a company named Watkins that made amplifiers and guitars, and one of their more popular models was the Watkins Rapier. And I always tell people, George Harrison probably had one. Jimmy Page probably had one because they couldn't afford a Fender Stratocaster. So there was a Watkins Rapier. And then from there, the story gets real convoluted and probably all fabricated anyway. So that's the answer. It's an English guitar. There is a band in England with the same name, Watkins and the Rapiers. Strangely enough, I don't know if anybody knew that. I mean,
I know a good attorney.
But I, what's the, if they probably pay us off in pounds, and I don't know how to spend pounds. So there is another band called Watkins and the Rapiers. But
You're going to play a little music for us in a second.
I will later on, yeah. I just want to say, I'm the new guy. Rick and I are the new guys in the band. It's 8 years now, so we're the new guys.
Oh, only 8 years?
Only 8 years,
I said, how long has Scott been in it?
37.
Oh, my.
No, that's not true. Scott, 18 or something?
Something like
18. Yeah, it's the band that won't go away.
Well, Steve, you grew up in the heartland. You grew up in Kansas?
I did, yep.
In Kansas. And what I find interesting about your work is that, well, especially on the photography side, you say that that having grown up in the heartland of America with its prevailing conservatism and history of deep-rooted traditions, you were drawn to subject matter that connects to hometown roots. But tell me a little bit more about sort of that foundation and why you're drawn that way.
Ah, interesting. Probably the short answer is where I grew up is pretty conservative. It's Bible Belt. And I and my friends, this is probably true of most teenagers, but we kind of didn't feel like we belonged, you know. I mean, it sounds arrogant, and it's really not the case. It's just
Teenagers can universally understand not feeling like you belong.
Right. But being interested in, you know, in art and music wasn't the norm. So that's probably not a very good answer. Let me do better. I got interested in, you probably saw a lot of pictures from county fairs. Yeah. And one of the appeals there, I guess, now that I think about it, is that they haven't changed much in 50, 60 years. It's still rural, heartland kind of America. And I guess I find that familiar and comforting, and also still kind of feel like I'm rebelling against that too. So it's that whole bag. I photographed county fairs for a number of years. And
you're right that you're fascinated by concepts of how we treat each other and how we relate to society. How do you capture that?
Oh, I don't know. Let's see. To be honest, the first response that comes to mind is probably there must be a better word than critical one, but critical one of like, you know, people, we aren't treating each other very well.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's probably that, if that makes sense, you know,
sure.
that kind of bent to it. Also, I've become a vegetarian. So I go out there and I see all these animals and stuff. And that's emotionally, I have emotional response to that. It's not that I think I'm better than, but it's an emotional kind of response. So, I just answered the question. If I'd have started here, we'd have saved some time. But I like photographs that stuff because it's dealing with emotional, you know, rivers in myself.
Sure. And so through an image, then. Give me an example of an image that you think kind of does exactly that, that might show us how we're interacting with each other or where we are.
Well, there's a number of photographs on my website, stevepiperphotography.com. Yeah, that's it. There is a section for county fairs. And I noticed, I looked the other day, make sure I was sending you the right address, for one thing.
Yeah, no, I found it.
Good.
As long as there's another Steve Piper photography.
There is another Steve. There are several others, but that's another story. There's another one here in town, in fact.
I know a good lawyer.
Okay. quick, before I lose the thread of your question. I was noticing there are a number of images. There's one of a sheep looking out of a pen, and where the sheep can't see it in front of the pen is a big chart showing cuts of lamb, you know.
Wow.
That's pretty subtle, isn't it? So there's a lot of things like that. I mean, I don't go looking for that, but it's kind of there, you know. And so the county fairs are kind of like a capsulized version of the world I think I grew up in. But you never know.
Well, and yet the work on display at the Little this month from you is
drawings.
Something different. Yeah,
it's drawings.
What have you been drawing?
Most of the things I'm going to put up are from the last couple of months. I mean, I've been drawing all my life, but I sporadically, you know, don't, you know. I'm not a very good drawer. I mean, I'm certainly not. No one would call me a good draftsman. I mean, Paul and Pete and Scott are certainly, you know, more skilled than that. But what I love about drawing is, I think the thing that I like about candid photography, which is what I do a lot of, it's there, you respond, you do it before you think too much, because if you think too much, you're making something that you've sort of reasoned out. And I like the images that are an emotional response to something. So I think my drawing is kind of the same way. And when I get to the end of a drawing and I feel like, okay, there's not any place there where I stopped and messed it up by thinking too much. So yeah, I guess I'm skeptical of my own thinking.
Well, you're hearing from the artists and the musicians. There's five in studio with me, and they are going to be involved with Sights and Sounds 3, Art by Musicians, Music by Artists, on Sunday. That's April 3rd. That's 2 days from now. 1:30 to 4:30. It's a reception, the opening reception, and performances, by the way. Is that right? Mm. You guys are performing? So there you go. 1:30 to 4:30 at the Little Cafe's Gallery. So their art's going to be up for the month, but performances, and I assume performances all month. I actually didn't check that out. You guys perform? Are you performing throughout the month here and there?
Well, Watkins is playing on Monday nights.
Okay.
You're not Margaret there in April. Margaret Explosion will be back in May.
Margaret Explosion like lives there, and this is the month that your art's there, and you're not there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect. We get to go look at
you
it.
Gotta choose. You can play or draw. Yeah. You can't do both.
When we're there, I usually have my eyes closed anyway. So. I mean, when we're playing, so.
Let's do this.
I have the mic open.
Let's get a short break, and we're going to talk to two of the other musician artists. And then before we go here, Steve's going to play a little for us here. So what we're going to do is a short break, and we're going to come back and continue the conversation with these musicians/artists that are featured at the Little Theater's Cafe Gallery all month long. And coming up on Monday on Connections. I should know this, right? Here are my notes from producer Megan Mack. I have all these books of art in front of me. I'm a mess right now. We're going to talk climate change first hour, talking regenerative agriculture to transitioning fossil fuels to clean energy. And we're going to hear about a number of upcoming events celebrating Earth Day. That's in our first hour. Second hour, it's our monthly science roundtable. What can yeast tell us about aging and longevity? We find out in our second hour. That's all Monday on Connections.
This is WXXI AM Rochester, WRUR FM and HD Rochester, WEOS FM and HD Geneva, and WXXI FM HD2 Rochester.
Texas singer Maren Morris came into her own as a songwriter in Nashville.
At the time, I didn't consider myself an artist, but with that song, it all changed. Can I get a
Now her next album is one of country's most anticipated debuts. Hear why later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
4 o'clock this afternoon on your NPR News station.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and want to mention WXXI is kicking off the 2016 online auction tonight with a celebration of art. 6 to 8 tonight at the Little Theater. 2016 auction featured artist Mark Groening is going to transform the Little Theater into an immersive art experience, creating a one-of-a-kind, well, one-of-a-kind artwork in front of an audience with live musical accompaniment. So really cool stuff. Learn more about the event and the auction at interactive.wxxi.org. The event free and open to the public. A lot going on. And the five musicians and artists in studio with me now have kind of, well, various studios of their own. Peter Monticelli teaches fine art at MCC and has had plenty of exhibits of his paintings. And mentioned as well, Peter did the construction work that created the Little Theater Cafe, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
When was that?
It started in 1983. When Bill Coppard bought the Little Theater, we fixed Little 1. Then we converted Lewis General Tire into Little 2 and 3. Then in 94, we converted Walton Collision into 4 and 5, and we took 2,500 feet from Birch Craig, who owned Craig Autometrics, the home and truck garage, and made the cafe.
That's your best work, I think, of all the work.
It was.
I'm a big fan.
Well, I was fortunate. I got to do several jobs that were in the city that were pretty interesting.
Well, they gave me all kinds of deep background notes on a lot of folks, except for your music, Peter.
Mine.
Well, you got to tell me about it then.
Okay. Okay, what do you want to know about it?
Well, I want to know what you play, what it is that you do here.
Well, I play drums. I started when I was 14. So
That was 60 years ago.
No. Is
it? Yes, it was.
No, it's 40, Pete. Come on.
Yeah, 40. And I'm still playing, which is really nice. And I play with the Debbie Kendrick Quartet. And that is a trio and Debbie. And the music we're doing is blues and gospel from the time of slavery. So it's all really root music, and it's played very simply and quietly, and she is just a dynamic singer.
Quietly? I mean, are you on brushes? What do you want?
Yeah, just all brushes. But I have Blastics that I've used for about the last 18 years, and so they're finally sounding correct. It takes time.
Yeah.
Well, I love the sound of a brush on a cymbal.
Oh, well, me too. And we are, can I mention that we are playing a gig?
Of course.
Okay, we are playing a gig at the 22nd of April, 9 to 12 at Lovin' Cup. And we play mostly coffee houses and stuff like that because it's so quiet. The music is very, very quiet. And so we're looking forward to that. That's the first time we'll be playing in a club. We played there during the Cool Blues to for the homeless with Joe Beard. And that was really fun. It was very well received. So it's nice.
Who's the best drummer alive today for you, Peter?
I'm partial to Steve Gadd. I mean, he's from here.
I always pronounced it God.
Well, yeah, right. Well, you and a lot of people in
yes.
Japan.
Me and a lot of people who played the drums growing up and saw his work. Yeah.
Yeah, I just saw the clip from he was 10 on American Bandstand. Holy mackerel. I mean, he just ripped that place apart. He was 10 years old. Wow. They let him solo for like 8 minutes on television. It was unbelievable. They did a clip of it for some reason, but he really changed. He really brought groove back to drumming, which I really appreciated.
Yeah, yeah. I think we overuse the word genius, but he may be.
Well,
yeah.
I got to tell you. Yeah. You know, I tell my students, you know, I believe that this is a true story, that Michael Jordan could not make his high school basketball team when he was a sophomore in high school. He couldn't hit the basket with a bulldozer. And he practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced and became Michael Jordan. Well, Steve Gadd was born like that. I don't know if he had to practice at all.
Yeah, he was on this program last summer and told the story of, I think it was 1975, they were working on 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover.
Oh, yeah.
And they
yeah.
couldn't really figure out how to start the song. And then he kind of just said, well, what about this little
brush thing, right? Yeah.
And everyone went, it's perfect, you know?
Yeah.
And
it was.
He's incredible. Well, we hear great things about your work as well and teaching fine art at MCC. How long have you been doing that?
Well, my first class was in 1988, and as an adjunct. And then I skipped a few years because I got busy and went back around 1993, and I've been there every semester since. And I really love it. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm like Scott Regan. Sputnik went up in 1957, and all the cultural courses went out the window. And everybody was taking math and science because Eisenhower felt that the Russians were ahead of us. So I went into industrial chemistry. Now, I have about as much aptitude for industrial chemistry as a fire extinguisher has more aptitude than me. And I don't know who ever thought that. But it took me I was 26 before I ever saw a real painting. Wow. I went to MCC on Alexander Street, and the teacher was Jack Clemens, God bless him, and he was 47 years old. He had just got his MFA, and his thesis show was hanging in a stairwell, and I came down the back stairs and saw it, and there was no place in my reality for what I saw, but I knew that that's who I was. And it was my defining moment. I've been painting. That was 49 years ago, and I've been painting ever since.
Wow. And you've had, obviously, a lot of exhibits of your own work, but what's going to be displayed at the Little? What kind of work?
In 1967, Richie Havens' first album was called Mixed Bag, and it made him famous. There's a song on there called Follow. And I think it was in 2012, I love that song, and it really is poetic. Jerry Merritt wrote the song, the words, and I did. There are 44 lines in the song, and I did 44 drawings, one for each line of the song. I'm going to show 7 of those lines in this show. And drawing for me, like him, is
he's pointing to Scott Regan, yeah.
I'm pointing at Scott. Oh, yeah, I forget. We're on the radio.
We're on the radio.
Yeah, we are on the radio. Yep. Thank God for that. Anyway, like him, drawing for me is like an existential experience. I go someplace else. I taught drawing for 12 years at MCC at night, and it got me. I just love to do that. I love to sit and do that. And I meditate when I'm doing it. And it's like listening to the Margaret Explosion, you know? I mean, you meditate when you listen to the Margaret Explosion.
Yeah.
At least I do. So,
It's a long way from industrial chemistry.
Oh, it's a long, yeah. Yeah, that's a really long way from industrial chemistry.
Well, let me bring in Jeff. Charles Jeff, he works in marquetry, creates images with wood inlay on panels, and he was the keyboardist of the Colorblind James Experience for many years. But I'm more interested in the Boston Celtics tryout, Jeff.
Well, I don't know.
What is the story there?
Oh, boy, there's a lot of things you can't say on the radio.
This is the Bill Russell, Bob Cousy years?
I love basketball.
Yeah?
And we moved. I was born in a sort of a ghetto of Boston called Dorchester, and my father came back from World War II and opened up a business and started doing pretty good, and we moved to some high-end suburb, which was a culture shock to me, and went to school there, and I was one of the first Jews there, so that was an issue, and I loved basketball, and I ended up, they wouldn't put me on the high school team, so I was in the church league. We had, the Temple had their own team, and I used to love that, and I went to basketball camp and actually tried out, and, you know, I didn't make it, but I loved it. I loved basketball. It's like a dance, you know. But that was kind of short-lived.
You could have been Bob Cousy, but I mean, yeah, just totally underappreciated.
Bob Cousy was
totally
great.
Underappreciated.
Yeah. And then I graduated high school and went to college for a little while and was in a fraternity, and one of the professors gave me a little vial of white powder and said, you want to stay up for exams, take this. Well, I didn't know anything about drugs at the time. And I put it all in a glass of water and I drank it, and I was up for 2 weeks and I almost died, and that was my college. And then I went home and convalesced at my mother's house and took all these different kinds of jobs. And I sort of, one day, I sort of got fed up with everything and hitchhiked to California. My mother drove me to work, and I went in the front door, out the back door, and hitchhiked to California. That was 67, the summer of love. I worked in a macrobiotic restaurant there on Haight Street and was in a band there. And it's just been, you know.
I'm sort of amazed you have any memory of that particular period.
I'm amazed about a lot of things. Yeah. Amazed that I've even made it here today.
So Jeff, you still playing? You're still playing some music?
I play piano at the house, and I do some recordings for different people that want me, you know, to put a track down or something like that. I'm on some of the Dadies albums. Became a piano tuner in 1978, which was the best thing I probably ever did. And the marquetry thing, my father was in World War II, and he was in a lot of big battles, and he liberated somebody from a prisoner of war camp that the guy asked my father for a picture of my mother, and he did a marquetry box, a beautiful thing that he gave my father, with a picture of my mother inside in a box, and I grew up with that. And I came to Rochester in 1990, and I opened up a piano shop in Village Gate, and I met this guy down cellar, this old guy who used to repair furniture and do veneer work, and I sort of just tried to figure out how to do it myself. And it took me a long time. I was doing it stupid ways, and finally I found out the way that you're supposed to do it. So I've been doing it for about 20 years now, and I just love it.
Marquetry is Marquetry.
Yeah.
Inlaid wood, and so what are you going to be displaying at the little theater, at the little cafe?
Just some abstract things and some pictures of people from around town and things like that.
How long does a piece take you?
It could take a long time because you got to cut one piece at a time, and you're sitting there with a little saw or a knife. You know, it takes. I just can't stop doing it. I don't know. It's a strange thing.
Some of the results can really be can be stunning.
It's communication. You know, you want somebody to see it. You want somebody to hear it. You know, it's all about that.
You spend more time doing marquetry or with your hands on a piano these days?
Yeah, I don't know. It's when the glue's dry and when the tape is dry, and I go and sit at the piano and play, you know. So,
are we going to hear any of your piano work at the Little
Bit? I hope so, yeah. I'll play a couple of things. Yeah, I hope to, yeah.
Well, you've met them all now. You've met Jaff, Peter Monticelli, Steve Piper, Scott Regan, Paul Dodd. They are the musicians, artists, underappreciated professional basketball players who will be at their work will be at the Little Cafe starting tomorrow. Reception chemist.
We're in trouble now.
Reception 1:30 to 4:30 on Sunday afternoon. Art by musicians, music by artists, and we think it's appropriate to ask Steve Piper to play a little for us here because we've got about 4.5 minutes left here. So, Pipe, before you do it, what do you want? What are you going to play for us here?
Well, I think. Hold on a second. Well, I think I should. Oh, headphones! Someone just put headphones on.
Good idea, Paul.
Oh my God, I sound like that. I think I'll do this. It's a song about the Little Theater Cafe. Yeah. And I wrote this thinking, you know, on a winter night when it's time to go home from there, and it's cold outside. We don't quite have that today, but if you listen to this rebroadcast tonight, yeah. It's cold outside. You'd be crazy to go out there. It's warm inside. Why would you want to go? But it'll soon be late. The movie's almost over. When the credits fade, you'll know it's time to go. Old friends were coming through the door. Seems like only yesterday. Old memories gather here once more in our favorite little cafe. Wait, my friend, your glass is nearly empty. We'll stay the end if we take it nice and slow. We'll meet again. The story isn't over, but until then, I think you ought to know that it's cold outside. We'd be crazy to be leaving.
It's warm in here. Why would you want to go?
Beautiful stuff, Steve. Thank you very much. Thanks for that. And I can certainly relate to what you wrote about there, even especially before the time of having a young son. My wife and I lived in that cafe. That was our date night spot. And
yeah, it's a great place.
Isn't that a great place? Yeah, very, very good. Well, Scott Regan, grab the mic back. We're on our last minute here. I have really enjoyed the conversation with you guys this hour here.
Well, Evan, thanks so much for having us. And now, of course, you owe me. You come down and play guitar in the other studio.
Oh, man. I have my quote-unquote band recorded at the House of Guitars a few years ago, and I've got very little evidence that it still exists, but I might be able to dig it out because I don't have the calluses to play more than about a song. But
One song will do.
Oh, boy.
You can get Steve to accompany you.
Yeah, I would love that. I want to thank our guests for the hour here. Scott Regan, host of Open Tunings, and really the man who rodeoed this great group of five artists and musicians. You can see their work starting tomorrow. They load in tomorrow, so you'll really be able to see it in the cafe, the gallery there, starting tomorrow. But their opening reception, 1:30 to 4:30 on Sunday. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for being here. I greatly enjoyed it.
Thank
you, Evan.
You guys can tell stories here anytime. Thanks to John Andrus, the engineer of the broadcast. Megan Mack is the producer. Our thanks to Barsook Records and Rah Rah Riot for the music. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk with you Monday on member-supported public radio.